Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher. I'm a current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so that's what we talk about on this podcast. I share strategies and ideas and blueprints. I tell stories. I share some of the epic mistakes I've made along the way, because ultimately, I believe that teachers play a vital role in helping students reach their creative potential. And today I want to talk about something kind of different, vaguely related to creativity, but still connected nonetheless. It's the idea of confusion and why confusion might actually help lead to better learning and deeper learning. Now, I want to put it out there ahead of time. I don't like confusion. Like I love certainty. I love clarity. For the last few weeks, I've been planning out my courses at the university, and I'm teaching 8 courses ranging from fully in person to fully virtual but synchronous. So ones where we're basically doing things on Zoom to fully asynchronous and online, and all kinds of hybrid options mixed in as well. And my goal in all of this is to build an empowered community in these spaces. And a part of that is to reduce barriers that might get in the way of learning. And a major focus has been UX design and clarity. And it really has been trying to make my courses as clear as possible. I want to reduce confusion in any way possible. Okay. It's surprising then that tonight, when I teach my social studies pedagogy class, my goal is to confuse my students. Now, here's what I mean. A few years ago, I listened to a 99% Invisible podcast where they mentioned an excavation of a ship buried deep underground in San Francisco. It's within the business district. And I paused the podcast and just spent a little bit of time pondering how a ship would end up buried deep within the city. Who put it there? How did it get there? Why did it remain buried? Now, I eventually turned the podcast back on, but I just wanted to sit in the confusion for a moment, in the mystery, and just think about it. And in this moment, I missed teaching middle school social studies. I imagined myself sharing this scenario with my students and then asked them to ask their own questions and develop a logical theory for how the ship had remained buried underground. They would have critiqued one another's theories until ultimately the class reached a consensus. In other words, we would have done a history mystery lesson. And I did a history mystery lesson with the Roman siege of Syracuse. Students had to guess how the people of Syracuse, at least according to legend, defended themselves in the initial siege by the Romans. In the first round, they asked yes or no questions and then formulated a hypothesis that they presented to the class. I then added new information and they had to revise their hypothesis. Students eventually discovered that the people of Syracuse used mirrors to catch the ships on fire. Think magnifying glass. Students might not have believed this theory. In fact, I'm not entirely sure that that's really what happened. But they were able to read this initial explanation, and then that was followed by reading an article which kind of contradicted the story and said, maybe that's true, but likely it's probably that the people of Syracuse use steam-powered cannons. It's a whole thing. But the idea is to at least get them thinking through this mystery, to come up with their hypothesis, to test it out, and to see that confusion is a necessary part of history. This process invites students to embrace the confusion that is history. They learn that being a historian isn't about memorizing names and dates and other facts. It's about confusion and discovery and argumentative lessons and fighting facts and coming up with your theories and testing them. It's a lot like science. In fact, that's part of why it's called a social science. It's about posing a hypothesis and testing it out with real facts. For what it's worth, the answer to the boat mystery is pretty interesting. It has to do with filling in swampy land and essentially building land in an area where the land didn't already exist. Now, I think this whole infill process is really interesting. But I actually think it becomes way more interesting after wading through this period of confusion ahead of time, before you find the true answer to why those ships were buried deep underground. And I point this out because what I'm curious about is, should school be more confusing? When I was writing the book Vintage Innovation, I took about 2 months and I just read only ancient texts. No contemporary novels, no reading up on behavioral economics, which is like a nerdy interest of mine. I avoided journal articles, news reports, and other forms of contemporary literacy. My goal was to step away from the present for just a moment, for a couple of months, and engage in a longer dialogue that spanned the centuries and even millennia. I noticed something almost immediately. These texts were deliberately confusing. It was not an issue of text complexity or archaic language or cultural knowledge that I didn't have. No, this confusion was on purpose. Whether it was a parable, a story, a Socratic dialogue, I can't say Socratic, that word is hard for me for some reason, Socratic dialogue. There was this idea that confusion is a vital part of the learning process. I think that's important. Confusion has some surprising benefits. It pushes you to slow down and to think more deeply. In the process, you struggle to figure things out, and the learning sticks. It's why I forget entire sections of textbooks, but I find it really hard to forget about a confusing parable. And this confusion often leads you to a place of nuanced understanding of the truth. By wrestling with it, you enter into mystery and paradox. I love the way that Annie Murphy Paul describes it. Quote, "We short-circuit this process of subconscious learning, however, when we rush in too soon with an answer. It's better to allow that confused, confounded feeling to last a little longer for two reasons. First, not knowing the single correct way to resolve a problem allows us to explore a wide variety of potential explorations, thereby giving us a deeper and broader sense of the issues involved. And second, the feeling of being confused, of not knowing what's up, creates a powerful drive to figure it out. We're motivated to look more deeply, search more vigorously for a solution, and in doing so, we see and understand things we would not have had we simply been handed the answer at the outset." Now, end quote, by the way. Now, schools aren't built around confusion. We tend to reward students for speed and accuracy. Our standardized tests place a high value in speed and accuracy rather than nuance and confusion. And we value teachers who can make learning efficient, clear, and easy to understand. But I wonder if we're missing something in this push toward efficiency and simplicity. Derek Moeller, who's a scientist and a YouTuber, published some fascinating research on science videos. When people watch simple videos with clear concepts, they tend to believe that they understand it at a deep level, but that's not actually the case. They are overconfident in their understanding and unaware of what they don't know. They're also less engaged mentally as they watch it. By contrast, when they watch videos with strategic confusion, especially those that make them make a hypothesis, They are convinced that they know very little of the information when in fact they are learning it at a deeper level. They also have higher engagement and deeper retention. There's a great YouTube video on this. I love it. It's called Khan Academy and the Effectiveness of Science Videos. It's so good. Now, I find this fascinating because we assume that students are failing to understand concepts because we are making them confusing. So we go for simpler texts and more easily digestible content. But what if this is wrong? What if real engagement looks less like a Khan Academy video and more like a messy, confusing Socratic dialogue or an open-ended experiment? Now, I want to talk about four ways that we can embrace confusion in the classroom. So that's the key idea. If we just explored why confusion is necessary, let's talk about how we can make it happen. All right, first idea, we can present mysteries for students. Provide students with scenarios that are deliberately and strategically confusing and let them posit their own hypotheses. A few years back, a student of mine wanted to know why laptops were icy cold when the tables were warm. Were they actually the same temperature? Were they holding heat differently? It was a great question. And that led to deeper research and a rabbit trail that he will never forget. But it had me thinking about the way that I'd been teaching science. I'd allowed students to pursue some of these questions through independent mini projects, these little inquiry-driven 2 and 3 day projects. But I hadn't really given them mysteries to solve. And it had me thinking that maybe by posing things that are counterintuitive and mysterious, that could lead to deeper understanding of science. One of my favorite examples of this is a local one. I'm not going to say the teacher's name because I want to keep this part private and confidence. But it was a local teacher here where I live in Salem, Oregon. And this teacher had students solve the mystery of why toxic algae had grown in the water and ruined our water supply for a whole summer. This single day mystery that the student, the teacher had created led to a deeper understanding of climate change and climate science. Because the reason we had this toxic algae was that the water temperature was higher, and the reason why the water temperature was higher was that the snowpack was melting earlier and earlier every year. And the reason for that was, well, climate change. So from there, she took it a step further and actually engaged in problem-based learning with her students. She designed this amazing problem-based learning activity that they did. And I want to tell you, with problem-based learning, students wrestle with a complex problem that doesn't have a simple yes or no answer. So instead of solving a mystery like the ship problem or the algae in the water, this is where they're given a complex, difficult problem, and they have to come up with a potential solution. So it not only gets them to think in terms of solving a mystery and chasing their curiosity, but they actually have to go through the creative process of coming up with a solution as well. So that's kind of the difference, I would say. You know, solving a mystery is sort of answering a problem. Problem-based learning is really coming up with a creative solution to that problem, which is different than just, you know, finding the answer. Anyway, that's the first idea. Give students a mystery to solve. Idea number two is don't shy away from confusing material. In other words, read works that are confusing. Watch movies that are perplexing and confusing. Read up on the early Socratic dialogues, even when they don't resolve themselves very easily. This can be hard when we have limited time and when students want immediate answers. But if we want the learning to stick, we need to create moments where students can sit in the confusion for a while. This also means that we need to avoid simplistic explanation. This is a challenge, right? Kids learn that plants turn our breath into food. Not really. That's actually not how it works. They learned that World War II was waged to stop the Holocaust. No, it's actually a little more complicated in terms of why we got involved in World War II. So I'm going to say this is partially true, maybe even not very true. These simplistic answers actually reinforce misconceptions and fail to recognize that younger students can handle nuance and confusion. This also means that we need to be careful with visuals. I see this all the time with science textbooks. A simplistic visual seems to clarify a concept, but it can lead to deeper misunderstandings and a false belief that you've figured something out when you haven't. Certain artistic renderings of something like the water cycle can accidentally lead to oversimplified views of how those systems work. As teachers, we can provide students with a chance to delve deeply into how things work, to see multiple perspectives, and to gain nuanced understandings of concepts and ideas and events and processes. But this requires deeper dialogue. As I go back to those ancient sources, I'm struck by the power of confusing dialogue. It's inefficient, it's messy, but it pushes you into areas of thinking that you'll miss with a simple chart. And the same thing is true in the classroom. Students need to have the space and time to debate ideas and engage in deep dialogue. In a math class, this might mean students compare and contrast strategies and discover new ways to solve problems. This is basically saying we're going to embrace the confusion. It might also mean that we need to let students struggle for a longer period of time. There's a great excerpt, I'm not going to read it, but a great excerpt from Adam Grant's book, Think Again. Love that book, where he explores the types of questions that teachers ask during a math lesson. They tend to go too quickly from open-ended questions that can lead to discovery, and they move really quickly into narrower questions that help students find the answers really fast. Students tend to focus on getting the right answer, getting it quickly, and in the process, what we end up with is students who are not able to learn from their mistakes. So again, what we're going for is we're saying confusion is a part of the learning process. We want that. Idea number three, allow for mistakes. When we embrace confusion, we give ourselves the permission to make mistakes. Whether it's a failed hypothesis or a mistake that we make and learning a skill, what we're saying is those mistakes are new iterations towards something better. It's not that we're embracing failure, right? Failure is permanent. Failing is temporary. We want students, though, to see that failing is a necessary part of the messy, idiosyncratic learning process. When this happens, students are able to develop more of a growth mindset. In other words, we're providing slack so they can develop grit. And as they do this, what happens is they begin to test their ideas. They begin to question some of their own beliefs and assertions. And when this happens, they begin to learn how to identify what they don't know. Going back to Annie Paul Murphy, she shared three studies that reinforce this idea that identifying confusion can lead to deeper learning. When students are able to say, I don't get this, I don't understand this, that is often the beginning of deeper learning. So allow for mistakes. Create a culture where mistakes are a part of the process and where students aren't punished for making mistakes. I think this is part of why I love the idea of mastery-based grading and why I always allow students to resubmit their work for a higher grade. It's because I want them to embrace this idea of making iterations. Idea number four, embrace student inquiry. Now, there's a lot of different models for student inquiry, but this is the idea of having students ask questions, engage in research, wrestle with those ideas, and share their findings with others. There are a lot of different ways to do this. It could be a Wonder Day project. It could be a science project that they do. It could be an inquiry-driven mini project that they do. There's just a lot of different ways that you could do inquiry-based learning. But what you're doing is you're actually structuring a whole unit plan that you're developing around student inquiry. And they're going to do their own research, analyze their results, and share their answers in, you know, a blog post, a podcast, a video, whatever it may be. Now, I want to point out that we don't want students to be confused all day. Confusion, if it's constant, if there's never a relief from it, it can create disengagement. And honestly, it can create a lot of anger, and students will just feel defeated. I don't want my students to be confused about everything all the time. I don't want my students to be confused about classroom procedures, nor do I want them to feel confused about how to navigate an online course. In these moments, the confusion is actually getting in the way of deeper learning. Similarly, I don't want students to be so confused by challenging materials or complex problems that they feel overwhelmed and they give up. Instead, I want to use confusion in a more strategic way. And when this happens, it leads to deeper understanding and learning that truly sticks. Whether it's an inquiry-based learning project, a larger problem-based project, a fun history mystery project, or merely a chance to compare mathematical strategies, I want students to see that confusion is a vital part of the learning process, and that confusion isn't something that we have to avoid, and that confusion doesn't mean that we're doing things wrong. It is quite simply a part of how we learn. When we use confusion strategically, students might get frustrated. Some of them might even be upset for a moment. And that's okay, because they'll also be engaged. They will slow down and think more deeply about the content. The end result is a more humble, nuanced, and ultimately a deeper learning of the learning content. And I think really what it comes down to is who they become when they can learn lifelong to embrace that confusion, to wrestle with the unknown, and to gain deeper, more nuanced views of their world. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts? Again, thanks so much for listening. Have a wonderful day, and go out and make something awesome.